Denied Knowledge into the running. 300 metres to go. Three lengths, Mr. Brightside, then Adelaide River, and a tissue brought to the outside from Coco Sun. Denied Knowledge, 200 metres to go. Has given a bold sight. Mr. Brightside wearing her down. 100 to go. Still Denied Knowledge, a length and a quarter. Mr. Brightside not getting there. And the mare has stolen it. Denied Knowledge wins. Broadsiding still a long way off them. Private Life, 200 metres to go. Two lengths for Roche. Then came Evaporate and Broadsiding. Private Life at the 100 from Feroce. Private Life, Feroce coming at Private Life. Private Life, Private Life has just won. Antino, every poster winner at the 200 metres. Five lengths in front of Desert Lightning, El Safina, followed by Craig, but it's all Antino. Blake Shin, Take a Bow, from last to first, has bolted in, demolished them. Antino, six lengths.
G'day listeners and welcome back to the Racing Previews podcast. As always with the reviews, it's just Will Alford and myself, Ben Coluzzi, on tonight. Will, we are reviewing Caulfield Guineas Day. It was the Might and Power Stakes, the Caulfield Guineas, and of course the Toorak Handicap. What did you make of the Saturday and how did you enjoy yourself out there?
It was a good day on track. It was a beautiful day at Caulfield. I had an okay day. Betting wise, I had a go at Broadsiding and I ended up backing another Will too, but I was lucky enough to back Jimmy Star, Herman Hess, and another thing that won, I can't remember what it was. Grinsing About. So. I did my arse in the main races, but I managed to not lose massively on the day. So that was a bonus. Yeah. But yeah, we'll talk about the track. Do you want to talk about that now?
Let's talk about the track.
Did you win on Saturday? How'd you go?
I actually finished down narrowly. I probably shouldn't have finished down.
Tell us about Hong Kong.
Oh, we can get to Hong Kong later. I still finished down narrowly on Saturday. Had a few good winners. Herman Hess, Attrition up there in Sydney, Jimmy Starr, on him to win the Rupert Clark as well, nice and early at $11. Sunday in Hong Kong.
That's a live ticket, Jimmy Starr, for the Rupert Clark.
Yeah, jeez. Yeah, absolutely. He's favourite, and he's going to be hashtag HTB. Hong Kong went 5 out of 5 yesterday. That was a great way to sort of wrap up the weekend because I felt like from a punting perspective, Saturday was a bit of a missed opportunity with some of our really good bets not saluting the judge first. So it was good to sort of wipe that away and quickly move on with a good Sunday. Let's talk about the track, Will. Caulfield, there has been lots and lots of people giving their sort of 2 cents worth, but I want to hear from your perspective and so does everyone else. What did you make of it?
Well, I sort of think, like, I don't normally care about these sorts of things, but it was there enough for me to care about it on Saturday. So, you know, I think basically what it was a culmination of heaps of different stuff. Like, it wasn't just one sort of factor. It wasn't just the first sort of inside three lanes being the spaces to be. It was, you know, various like rail position and movements from prior meetings. There was a southeasterly, which didn't affect the sprint races. So the sprint races were slightly less, I think, biased or advantaged. So, you know, you saw Bellatrix Star come from behind. Anyway, I sort of think that it was just slightly less biased in the shoot races and the circle races was difficult. As I said, the inside three lanes were the spot to be, and that 6 to 9 range was difficult, especially when you were like swooping around that Caulfield turn. Being in that spot was a difficult spot, and I think what also accentuated that was the vastly slower times and like weirdly slower times for the final 200 meters of the races, and that deteriorated throughout the day. So I'm half thinking there might have been a little bit more irrigation onto that sort of last 200, 400 meter, you know, in the straight than what we typically see. Just based on the times of like some really slow. For the classes of horses that were racing on Saturday, and the ground that they were racing on, I think It was not typical how slowly some of them were finishing. So, and it deteriorated throughout the day as well. So I think it has been like sort of slightly over-exaggerated. Like it wasn't like some time. It wasn't like that. It wasn't like a Moonee Valley last year where it was if you were on the rail, it added 5 lengths. It wasn't that. It was there.
And then, on this day last year, it might have even been a little bit worse when Griff won the Caulfield Guineas.
I don't really.
It's hard to remember back exactly.
Oh, no, it wasn't. It wasn't like that because attrition came from the middle.
Possibly. Sorry, not on this day last year. 1,000 Guineas day last year.
Maybe. I don't know. And you know, it was on pace today at Bairnsdale. But
yeah, but no one cares about that.
But no one cares. So, like on these bigger stages, it's going to get more thing, and people are going to over exaggerate these sorts of things. But you know, we're still there enough for me personally to care about. And I don't normally. I prefer not to think about tracks, but it was there, so I did have to think about it.
Yeah, well, I think it was over exaggerated a little bit. It wasn't exactly a one lane highway, but yeah, I still think there was something there as well. And yeah, that inside just seemed to be a bit firmer, and Caulfield has copped a lot of racing in recent months. Even that Underwood Stakes day was a wet track, or a soft track anyway. And you know, when the rail's out and those outside lanes sort of get chopped up, that means there's more wear and tear, and it's just not as good a going. So that is always a possibility, and maybe they have to look at not only the preparation of the track itself, but also what meetings they're running where. So
yeah. And to add to that, you know, the last meeting there, the rail was out 6 meters, and they were well off the fence. The inside was inferior going. So shifting back to the true after that would have, I think it's just a culmination of lots of different things, and that's just what happened on the day.
Yeah, but I would expect it to race more fair this Saturday, whatever happens, because the rail will go
racing probably Wednesday as well.
Yeah, Wednesday the rail's at 12, so yeah. Who knows what's going to happen there. But Caulfield Cup day, it'll be at 3, and there is a fair bit of rain coming on Friday. So a bit of rain always evens it up a little bit, because that traffic on the fence means the track chops out a lot. So let's get into the races now. Race 7, we go straight to the Group 1s. The Might and Power Stakes, Denying Knowledge, gets her very first Group 1 on the board. She went faster in front than I thought she was actually going to. She's gone 7.8 lengths faster than the class on punting form, which is very fast for Group 1 average. She's posted a whole new career peak rating of 102.3. Mr. Brightside has been set the challenge of running her down. He's only gone to 101.3, so a regression there, and a tissue has finished off well with 100.2 after balancing up and sprinting home. But Deny Knowledge, I think it's all honours here. And Mr. Brightside, again, on this firm footing, chasing a hot speed at 2,000 metres, I just don't think it's his go.
Yeah, I think Craig potentially, not massively, but maybe let Deny Knowledge and Mark Zara have a little bit too much room to play with. Especially the way the track was playing, you know, was a good four. As you said, I don't think it's Mr. Brightside's perfect setup. Strongly run 2,000 on a dry track. I think we've got enough. I mean, I don't like to pinpoint these sorts of things, but I think he might go that little bit better on a soft track. Some of his best performance have been on good tracks, but some of his worst have been on a good tracks, and he's just that consistent level when just that little bit of give in the ground. You know, I'm not sure what to make of this race, to be honest with you, because it's, you know, where these horses go to either the Caulfield Cup, the Cox Plate, or even a Tissue's case, the Empire Rose. So Deny Knowledge is very, very well weighted in the Caulfield Cup now, but do I believe that? Not necessarily. It's an interesting one for punters that work on weight for age ratings. So, you know, she's run a rating of 102.3 at weight for age here, and she's, you know, I don't know the exact weight she gets in a Caulfield Cup, but she's going, I saw before, she will get in the best weighted horse in the Cup.
I reckon it's 51 kilos.
Yeah.
Check.
Yeah, and she's being ridden by Craig Newitt.
50 and a half,
there you go. And she's just won the Martin Power Stakes. So, you know, theoretically, if it was black and white, punch that rating in, and you know what you just back her, but it doesn't work like that. And I, well, we'll see what it's all about, price obviously, but I don't know exactly what to make of it, and I don't know what number to give her, but I guess I'll figure that out on Wednesday and Thursday. But yeah, I'm not exactly sure what to make of this race. It's Atisha Wells in the backup. That was maybe her peak run for the prep. She always runs her peak at 2000. But with that said, the Empire Rose might not be coming up super strong this year, and that's her sort of race. It was unlucky, not unlucky, but she was running on well behind Pride of Jenny, and she got too far back. Adelaide Rivers, thereabouts, and Coco Sun is not great. Slow. There, so, yeah. I'm really not exactly sure what to make of this race, but it all just depends. Like Mr. Brights, we saw him flop in the King Charles last year, and
again, that was a very firm track.
Yeah, that was a firm track, and he bounced off that to run second in a Cox Plate. So, based on this, if he runs this rating in a Cox Plate, he can't win. But it'd be wrong of me to say that he can't bounce back, because we know how good he is.
I think you can bounce back, but I don't think you can win a Cox Plate. Just with the way that the race is going to set up with Prodigy on the backup and potentially going even a little bit faster than Deny Knowledge. Great Mooney Valley horse. And, you know, if he gets a smother up, then potentially he's a chance. But, yeah, it is hard to see him winning a Cox Plate off this. I think of the trifecta or of the first four, the only horse I want to back at its next start is Atisha, because she's going to be dropping back in class and racing more average horses. She's going to have horses like Orchestral to beat back to 1600 meters. So this rating at weight for age against fillies and mares only, unless there's a three-year-old filly who comes out of the woodworks, she's got to be favorite for mine in the Empire Rose.
Yeah.
And she wasn't earlier today. So anyway, we'll absolutely snap that up. Let's go to the Caulfield Guineas. It wasn't a stellar addition by any means, but nonetheless, it's another Group 1 for Chris Waller and for Damien Lane. I think Chris Waller's had something like 6 Group 1s so far this spring, and not one of them has been ridden by James McDonald. I think I saw that stat. So that is very, very interesting stat. Private Life has been able to lead this. Punting Form has actually got it going a decent tempo to the 600, which is interesting. His weight for age rating is only 99.1, which is well down on Caulfield Guineas averages. Feroce gets into second, 97.5, Evaporate 96.5, and Broadsiding 96.4. So what did you make of this race, how it panned out? And obviously we need to touch on the favourite and some of J-Mac's comments post-race.
Yeah, I think it's a very similar race to last year's Guineas, where the leader, Griff, won, and we know he's not a special horse by any means. Chris Waller, third up, you know, was go time, and he jumped well, and Damien Lane was good enough to find the front and put himself in the spot you wanted to be. The pace was solid without being ridiculous at all. And yeah, they sort of put the sustained there. Right, it was a sustained pace. So they just sort of went the same pace throughout, and it deteriorated essentially. So just on Broadsiding, you know, it's an interesting one. I was unpleased with the ride that J-Mac gave it initially, but the more I sort of look at it, and the more I don't mind it, like, you know, potentially could have pumped him up to lead, but you know, they don't do that sort of stuff. And you know, he made a beeline to the rail, which is where you wanted to be by that stage in the day. You know, he knew if he went wide, it wasn't going to work. And then by the 600, there were horses falling back into him and he had to come wide. So, yeah, the horse finished off okay, but next is the Cox Plate. And do I think he can win a Cox Plate? Well, yes, because he's in the race and every horse can win it. But I don't think he wins it often enough for the price that he's likely to be sent off at. So what do you think he starts in a Cox Plate? Or what are they going to bet, like $10?
$6, $7?
Jeez. Yeah, I mean, if he's inside $10, I don't want it. Because yeah. There's a bad guineas and he was, you know, the run of Evaporate is very much the same. And I don't have much of an opinion. I just don't like the race. I love what he did first up. I love what the market did with him first up, but I don't love this guineas. And I don't want to be with it in a Cox Plate that is going. This is going to be a strong Cox Plate. It's not going to be a weak Cox Plate. So he's going to be priced. If he's $6 or $7, he's going to be priced based on something he's never done in his life. And the signs were there first up, but they definitely weren't there second up. And it's hard to back a horse. And I guess we sort of did it with Via Sestina, but there were, I don't know. I just don't love this. And I mean, Via Sestina was $5 versus Buckaroo and Alias. And it was a very easy forgive. There's obviously the clear excuse. Well, the track wasn't perfect, but the run of Evaporate was just as good as his. And that turns me off. And I don't want to take inside, you know, to be honest, I don't want to take inside sort of 15 to 1 for him in the Cox Plate.
Oof, fair enough. I think at the bottom, you know, the bottom line is that he was disappointing here, whichever way you slice the pie, regardless of track bias or things stacked against him, Caulfield first time. The fact is he has regressed over three lengths. He ran to 103.5 in that Golden Rose. He became the first horse ever to win the Golden Rose first up. So that tells me a few things. Not many horses probably attempt to win the Golden Rose first up. A lot of them probably go to a run to the Rose and hit the Caulfield Guineas third up. And a lot of horses aren't good enough to actually win it first up, even if they do try to win the Golden Rose first up. So I am going to be slightly more forgiving than Will here. I think he can hit back really hard third up. I thought the late piece of his work was really good once he did get balanced up. He didn't really sort of quicken when they turned for home. And we know he's got, you know, the best horse hasn't won the race here. It's as simple as that. And we know he has a ceiling which is much higher than these horses. He just hasn't produced it. So it's going to be interesting. I think he will get back to that 102, 103 range plus in a Cox Plate. But no, it's not going to win a Cox Plate. And I'm not saying I am going to have him on top. I'm just saying I'm willing to be a little bit more forgiving of him. And yeah, he's only going to be third up in a Cox Plate. So there's every chance that he can still lob in like a Champion Stakes at Flemington at the end of the carnival. And that's the exciting part. I still think there's a fair bit of racing left in him this prep.
Yeah, I'm forgiving in the fact that I think he can get back to 102, 103, but he's going to have to run 105 to 106 to win the Cox Plate. And I don't want to back him to go from 96 to 106 in one run.
Yeah.
That's fair enough. And I'm not going to get the price to do it.
Yeah. The other thing is he's not built like the other great three-year-olds that we've seen in the past, whether that actually means anything or not. Strength is a big thing in racing. And if you look at broadsiding compared to Animo, that's the obvious example. Animo was a tank.
You know? He's not big, is he?
He's tiny broadsiding. So dropping down to 49 kilos will help him in that regard, but I don't think a lot of yard people are going to like him when he comes up against, you know, Pride of Jenny, who's going to be looking an absolute beast on the backup, Via Sestina and Prognosis, who is going to be looking like one of the best horses we've probably seen in terms of a type in the last couple of years. So, yeah, maybe you do get better than the price he currently is and he might even drift, but yeah, I wouldn't have him on top of a Cox Plate, but I would have him top 3-4. All right. Let's go to the Group 1 Toorak Handicap. It was race 10 on the day. And G-Bot, what a absolute performance this was by Antino. They went an even speed to the 600. Blake Shin said he wasn't happy. He sort of made his move around that time. Antino has been able to sustain the gallop. He's posted a weight for age rating of 106.7. In my time using Form King, it's probably the biggest rating I've seen, and it's come from sort of nowhere. The platform race is out of the Fan Stakes, which has proven an almighty sort of form reference off a fast tempo that Pride of Jenny set. And yeah, he's gone back to 55.5 kilos after carrying weight for age. And, you know, in hindsight, you probably would have marked him and another Will even closer, but I don't think anyone quite expected this.
No, not at all. I mean, it's come out of nowhere. And the funny thing with ratings, like I just said with the filly that won the Might and Power, who is called Deny Knowledge. I mean, it depends how you interpret it. Like, she's going to be the highest rated horse at the weights in a Caulfield Cup, but do you want to use exactly that rating? Maybe not. And next time Antino steps up to the Raiders, do I want to give him 106 point, what was it, 106.7 or something, wasn't it?
Mm. Yeah. But the market, I don't think the market will give him that either.
Yeah, no, they won't. But it's still there. That's what I'm saying. But what a ride. Like, it was beautiful to watch. And it was so smart too. Just the way, I mean, yes, he took off, but he took off at the exact right moment, you know, down that Caulfield back straight where it's the straight run instead of turning, because he knew it was the last race in the day. Blake Shue knew that if he waited and tried to loop them, yeah, I mean, he probably still would have won because the horse won by 6.5 lengths, but like, he gave his horse the best chance because he was half slow and he had no other, you know, he was last, and he made that move and put the pace into the race, and I don't really know. It's a performance that it just came out of nowhere. I did not expect it. I backed Another Wheel on the morning of. I took 340 and it's been crunched into 220. So I'm thinking before the race, what a bet. And about the 1,000 meter mark, when Antino and Craig are second last and last, and Another Wheel's leading at a decent pace, a solid pace that's nothing ridiculous. And I'm just thinking, oh, what a bet. And then it was all over. I don't know how to explain Another Will's performance. It was awful. Yeah.
This wasn't as fast as, what do you call it? It wasn't the Epsom he ran in.
The Doncaster.
He started favorite in that, or close enough too, and this wasn't anywhere near as fast as that, but still, it's two high pressure miles he's now completely failed in. So where does that sort of leave him going forward?
Yeah, I don't know what to make of it at all. The race has gone, you know, as we said, the Caulfield Guineas hasn't gone well, and this race has gone enormous. It's gone about 10 lengths quicker on the clock, and obviously a lot better ratings-wise. I sort of hope they back him up, but the champions, well, there's Hong Kong talk too, and I'd love to see him go over to Hong Kong, and, you know, he'd measure up this rating, and I saw Time Form gave him 124. That rating measures up and can win a Hong Kong mile. So very exciting. And he's by Redwood too, so you'd expect even 2,000 would suit him down to the ground. So, I mean, this race has gone massive. Do I want to give him that rating again in the next time? Well, I'd want to see him do this number again before I say, well, this is actually a horse that can run this number consistently.
No.
Well, I mean,
he'll never get to this again.
Well, he might. You can't say no, because he's done it, and he's done it in fast time.
Oh, you're allowed to have an opinion. I don't think he'll ever get to 106.7 again.
Yeah. Maybe not.
I just think, like, as good as he was awesome, Blake, the timing of this mid-race move is just something else. And then the pace at which he got around the field, he was able to get back on the fence before they even hit the home turn.
Yeah, that's what was so good about it. Like he made the move at the most perfect time. He knew exactly what he was doing. He saved the most ground. And, you know, obviously it's to make that ground up, it's easier to do that while you're running straight compared to when you're turning. You know, try sprinting when you're turning left on a, you know, you're turning around a bend. So it was just brilliant.
Yeah, 100%. All right, do you want to go back to race four?
I do.
Since you backed the winner, it was Grinzing a Bell. She took out
the anniversary. Well, I want to go back to race three first. Can we go race three?
Oh, sure. We'll go to the Northwood Plume, taken out by Aviatrice. Northwood Plume. Gee, this has just absolutely kicked their heads in. Gone to 98.7 with Craig Williams in the saddle. Sat up on the speed, was way too good for A Little Deep, who went off race favourite. And Bezo, bless her cotton socks, was able to hold on to third with us teaming in a nice each-way ticket. So I think this race spot was the one I went, Bezo's held on to third and kicked back along the inside. That's when I start to think a little bit like, yeah, this track is playing inside after it had gone.
I don't know. I thought Bezo held its rating. But this race has gone enormous. This is a race that you want to follow into the spring. This is a perfect platform for a lot of these horses. Aviatrice has gone massive. I think, you know, a race like the Oakley Plate for her is a possibility. You know, I think she's gone massive. Yes, she was suited, but she still run the time. I think she probably would have won the Scalacci, which was run later in the day. A Little Deep, come off her rating, was well supported, but I think she probably found her level. Maybe she needs a spell potentially. Bizzo held its rating. I really wish they went to Seymour because I would have won.
How far?
Oh, God. Anyway.
It opened third favourite.
I know. I backed it hard. Kundalini was off her rating, but it sort of confirmed to me that last start rating was real. I didn't have much of an opinion of her, and then she did what she did last time and she confirmed it here. So she's a filly that you continue to follow. The two out of this race that just scream back me wherever I go would Charmstone, who was off a year, who was soft in the market, ended up starting $12 and these, like Betfair. She's the best. She has the best form on the board. You know, you look in the form book, she's, you know, was she fourth or fifth in the Golden Rose last year, and ran some massive splits. Yeah, well back there too, which was surprising to me because I didn't think she had in form, but just got a long way back and ran some really nice sectionals. And Yellow Sam too. That's a horse that can run, go forward. And, you know, she did some nice things in Tasmania. So you can follow those horses. To be honest with you, you can follow the entire race. I just think it's gone really well. They'll all go down to about Shame or maybe down to Charmstone. But, yeah, really like the race. And it's filled with coming winners, I think.
Beautiful. Let's go on to the anniversary Vase now, which was race four, 1,600 metres, Grinzing a Bell. After getting beat by Elsafina last start at 1,500, she got favours this time around. She did carry the 59 kilos. She's run to 97.5, winning on the weekend. Private Legacy is, wow, jumped out of the ground late to get second, and another sort of couple strides, and she might have been the winner. See You in Heaven was just a little bit plain late, but she battled on hard for third and rumbled again, yet again at a big price, runs top four. So she's going well for something slightly easier.
I thought Grinzing a Bell was given a relatively soft time of it in the lead. They didn't go an overly strong gallop, and, you know, she was left alone essentially, and the main chances were out the back, and she was obviously in the right spot. I think the logical progression for a lot of these, or most of them anyway, is the Empire Rose, especially those that were at the top of the market. And, you know, this is mostly irrelevant to that they're not quite at that level, and I'm not exactly sure. Unless maybe they go to the matriarch with some of these, but
a lot of them would be a query at 2000.
Yeah. Well, I can't think of any of them. Maybe there's during the spring carnival or race, or there's that race that Whistler Lash won last year at Moonee Valley that maybe a few of them might end up in, but.
The Tezio, I think there's been a distance change to 2040. So.
Oh really? Okay. Well, maybe not. So they're sort of maybe potentially hamstrung, and they have to go to the Empire Rose, and this is not going to be relevant in that race. And you know, I think on the rating that Grinzinger Bell ran first up, you know, she'd have some sort of relevance in that race, but you know, that race was literally affected by a hailstorm, so
yeah,
the margins were accentuated there. And I you know, she's run the same rating twice now after that, since that, or close enough to, and it's a bit off that. And I'd be surprised if she gets back to that big number. She ran 101, I think, at Weight for Age there. So I wouldn't give her that anytime soon.
Yep. Let's get on to the Rupert Clark Stakes favorite after this race, which was in the Weekend Hustler Race 5. Jimmy Starr has exploded yet again. He was going 1,100 metres to 1,400 metres, which lots of form analysts don't really like, but gee, his late work again was absolutely outstanding off an even tempo. He's run to 100 on the dot. He's beaten Super Aussie and Who Dares, but really, he's just kicked their heads in here. And I think 1,400 metres is probably going to be his sort of sweet spot. He's just rounded them up like a good horse. And I think we're starting to see the hype being delivered on, Will.
Now, I don't know what happened last preparation. Obviously, he burst onto the scene off 70 days at Caulfield that day, and the market at its next start, you know, he started $1.39 there, so the market had him going to an enormous level, and they sort of, you know, the camp got it wrong, I feel, and tried to do some things with him, and it just that I think the horse might have just needed a reset. So he's reset. He's turned up at Caulfield, run massive splits over 1,100 meters, and went massive, and he turned up at Caulfield again, confirmed it. He went better. You know, and the other thing as well, he was the outlier on the day in regard to the track pattern. You know, he was in that three wide line and came wide around the turn. He wasn't too wide, but he still wasn't inside. He was swooping and it didn't matter. He smashed him. So he is the on top horse for the Rupert Clark That's it. He's the on-top horse of Rupert Clark. He should be favourite for that race.
From memory, when he won at Caulfield the last time, there was also a bit of a bias that day when he sort of whipped around the field and beat Who Dares going back to February. So he's now done this sort of twice against the pattern of the day. I guess my only little query is but that he did sort of go back downhill towards the end of last preparation. Is that any concern for you that he was so good early and not as good late, and we've still got another month or so to get to a Rupert Clark?
No, it's a small sample size. It's happened once. You know, I don't know why, for whatever reason, he must have just, maybe he was battling some sort of niggle that they pressed on with, and I'm not exactly sure. I don't know. But you know, you can't forecast horses to lose their form when they're going so well. You know, you miss opportunities, and I just think it's a bad idea to forecast horses heavily regressing when they're in form, and because they might be deep into the prep, or it's happened once before. So I think that there's no indication. Like he's smashed him here. He's run a good rating. He's going to get him well in the Rupert Clark. So if he turns up next time, I assume they'll run in a group sort of listed race at Flemington, just to keep his rating down, not to get another penalty. So he probably gets him with 54, 55 in the Rupert Clark, and and he'll be extremely well weighted in that. So he'll get in below Magic Time, and I assume he'll be the highest rated horse in that at the weights, and he will be the horse to beat there.
Beautiful. I guess the bit of the curveball is, if I have heard, if Antino is going to Hong Kong, there's a chance they freshen up, go to Rupert Clark, and then put him on the plane. So that'll be an interesting dynamic.
That'll be a race. I mean, Antino's going to be favourite in that, but
yeah, it'll be interesting. I think that's less likely to happen than more, but you know, we'll soon find out. But yeah, no doubt he looks the one down in the weights that is still in that real upward trajectory and deserved favourite for the Rupert Clark, even this far out. Let's go to the Herbert Power, where it was Kieran Maher show yet again over 2,400 metres. He's ran the 1-2 with a horse who SP'd $16 and another one who SP'd $41. Herman Hess has just been afforded the most beautiful run in transit ever by Declan Bates here from Barrier 1. He's got the gap at the top of the straight, and it was just a matter of how far once he actually got out. Akita Sushi, I'm not sure where this has come from, but there was a bit of stable confidence around that he would run a much improved race, and he has done exactly that. But Herman Hess, it's not a great rating, 96.6. He gets into the Caulfield Cup now. What did you make of the victory?
Pace was good enough. The race hasn't gone very well, but you know, he's in the Caulfield Cup, and he'd be, I'm not sure, he'd probably a 40s chance. It's an even race this year, so you know, any horse can win it, and he's a horse that can settle on speed, which is obviously a bonus. Akita Sushi came over with a little bit of a wrap. Was it 2 years ago? Now for the Melbourne Cup and Caulfield Cup, so you know he'll be in that race again. Braden Starr was massive. I think this race as a whole isn't necessarily relevant toward the Caulfield Cup. I mean, it is next week, so there's only one or two horses that'll be actually in that race. But I think it's a real race for country cups moving forward. You know, most of these will. The progression is the Geelong and Bendigo Cup and those sorts of races. So, yeah, I think these horses that have filled the sort of top 10 will be seen in cup races, the country cups. So, you know, which is exciting because a horse like Braden Starr looks like he's going to get back to that Bendigo Cup rating he ran behind Interpretation, who went on to run third in the Melbourne Cup. So, you know, there'll be no internationals like there have been in the past in the Geelong Cup and Bendigo Cup. So these are the horses that'll be featured.
We need a market.
The market.
We need a market for Braden Starr. We need $21 in the Bendigo Cup. That's what we need.
Well, you're not going to get $21. I'd probably say he'd be favourite for it. So this was a big run. It wasn't necessarily. He sort of half cut the corner, but he was a big run and yeah. Thank you, Herman Hess.
Thank you very much. Yeah. not like we obviously tipped him, so we're allowed to say whatever, but are you not surprised the price he's gone off here, given he's a last start winner at Mornington? The hit the road Jack form was excellent. He's drawn barrier one, pardon me, for Kieran Maher, Declan Bates, good staying camp, good platform, and he's going to, you know, being the right part of the track. Like, I was surprised he was a drifter on the day.
Yeah, well, I mean, so was I, because I had him $8. But I don't think the market had that race last time. I don't think the market has the Ansett Classic or the Bendigo, the Benalla Cup going quite as well as what the market had it. So, I mean, As what form King
the ratings
has.
So, of it, yeah.
Yeah, so maybe that was a little edge that we, yeah. They didn't like it, and they were, what did the market actually like in this race? They did back Braden Starr, but, you know, he wasn't at the top of the market. The horse they backed was Hurricane, who was 16, up to 25.
This is crazy.
Yeah, it was a big go. I mean, it was probably to an extent stable inspired. I mean, it was good first up, but 16 to 25 second up off, what was it, a 64 or a 70 or whatever it was. You know, the rating was good, but it wasn't that good. I just didn't expect that. And yeah. There we go. Just most impressionist was the big drifter in the race, and was the other mid-race move that happened on the day. That one didn't go perfectly like Antino's did.
Yeah, no, he's just not going as well.
No.
That Benalla Cup form actually has rated really well on Form King. It is worth noting the second horse in that race, Too Close to Sun, has actually gone up. The longest price in the Coonjee, and I know it was only a slow tempo, but he showed signs of life there, and he's the longest price in the Coonjee. I won't tell anyone.
No, I think it should be shorter in the Coonjee.
Yeah, 100%. 100% he should be. And he's drawn barrier one with a rail out 12 metres. And he comes in with a very good last start rating. All right, race 9, Bellatrix Star. As you said, Bot, this is one of the horses who did win from, you know, well off the fence, circling them. But you said out of the chute, it wasn't as much of a disadvantage. And she's now put together 3 wins in a row. So she's really stacking up nicely. She's gone to 98.1 here. She's nabbed Oscar's Fortune, and Mahaba's steamed home into third. But Bellatrix Star, it's hard to take much away from her.
Yeah, I mean, it's not. And I think she's the only horse that you can really follow out of this race. Because this race has gone awful. I don't think this has gone much good at all. You know, she's a 3-year-old filly in a group three at weight for age. So group two, sorry. I mean, she probably goes to the cool more, and I don't think she's quite good enough to win that. But she'll be a nice sort of 3-year-old. A nice open grade 4-year-old and older mare at that sort of group 3, group 2 level. I think maybe a horse that you can follow out of this race, and I mean the only horse I think you can really follow is Mahaba, who made a little bit of ground and can drop back in class. I don't know how heavily its handicap will be affected by this, but it's a horse that, it can drop back in class and run in slower races than this. And I'm just not a fan of this race at all. It just stinks. Really slow time. Really, really slow.
Yeah. Fair enough. Happy to go to Rose Hill now, or any other comments about Caulfield? Yeah, of course we are.
Why? No, not really. The Thoroughbred Club of Australia plate went no good either, the 3-year-old fillies.
Yeah.
So I thought Chewing Gum was okay, and the market heavily backed it last start at Sandown, and it was bad for whatever reason. But
what do you make of that?
It did cut the corner there. And what I make of the horse we're about to talk about is the heavily backed debutant. I don't know. I have no idea. Who knows? Like it was off the map. I mean, it was 3 wide, but... You know, as I said, it was sort of there, but it wasn't as bad in the shoot races.
Yeah.
I mean, I work on data, and the data says this is, I mean, it's run second last, and I mean, it's on debut, so it can improve. The market liked it. The market liked it for some reason. I don't know why. Maybe I sort of half think that they back the debutant because all of the rest of the form in this race is junk. So, they just want a different form. I assume that's what it was. So.
Yeah. Well, Kurianagi was pretty average last start.
I mean, Kurianagi's no good.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll probably maintain that as well. Quick one talking about Chewing Gum. We've got this Treasure of the Moment that goes around on Wednesday, race 2 Caulfield. You know, picked up Kadeem and spat it out, and also Chewing Gum. What do you think? Have you had a look at that race? Briefly,
I sort of thought that it was 1600? About the right... Well, she won at 16 last time. That's no query.
Nah, 14.
Oh, well, oh, yeah, okay. So, yeah, no query at the distance at all. Like the stable says they're training her for an Oaks. So, no, I don't have any issue with that. I thought she was about the right price. That's sort of 360, 380, around about there.
Yep.
What did I like in that race? Where is it? Keep talking, I'll find it.
All right, let's go over to Rosehill Gardens. There weren't any Group 1s on the day, but there were a few rich prize money races. And Bot, it was the Victorians who went up to Sydney. We stole their money again with the likes of Attrition and also Here to the Shock, Here to Shock for the Hayes boys. Quickly go to the Gloaming Stakes. El Castello's won this, ran to 95.2, beat Swift Falcon 93.5, Firm Agreement third, Rag Queen fourth. This is an interesting race. I think the favourites haven't really been given much hope. Two really, really negative rides. But, you know, they're both going to a spring champion in a few weeks' time, and this isn't the grand final. So I think this was just a bit of a case in point of this is not the target race. Happy just to ride them negative. And El Castello, at the end of the day, is a very good horse, and it's going to be right in the picture as well for a spring champion. So although Swift Falcon sort of did drop Henline, I am going to be a little bit forgiving of Henline because I think he will elevate once he gets to 2,000 metres and beyond again. You know, there might be the opinion that this is an end of prep run, but I'm not going to take that opinion. I just think he was never, ever in the race. So just a bit of a barrier trial. I think you can follow first, third, and sixth across the line. Have you found anything, Bob?
For the Caulfield race?
Yeah. Don't worry about it.
No, I've got it. Statuario, I think, can take a further spot forward.
Yeah, all right. Number one.
Number one. It's not a bet, but, I mean, it's slightly shorter. I mean, if you get 12, 14s, it's probably a bet. But that Actor Non Verba went quite well in a maiden, but Plymouth went well too, ran massive splits and against Blake Shin, but it's going to go back from gate 12, you know. What's Caulfield going to play like on Saturday with the rail out 12? I'm not sure. But Treasure the Moment will go forward, and, you know, she's definitely favourite. So, and I think 1,600 metres is absolutely no query for her.
Sweet. She looks the one to me. Roman Consol, race 5, Switzerland. We poo-pooed Nico about this, so we're going to have to apologise to him because it's... It's really elevated off last start. Ran to 100 winning this. Coleman, you know, sort of question marks about just how good he is or how well he's come back. He's run to 96.3, but really Switzerland's dropped him. And Yoshinobu has run third. But Switzerland wins here, and there is still a bit of news about whether they're going to take him or Stormboy, but I think it is going to be Stormboy. Have you heard any official confirmation?
First of all, I'm not apologising to Nico. I mean, he can't win an Everest. I mean, if I owned Stormboy, and they ended up taking Switzerland, I would be sick because with the way that the track at Caulfield played, yep. I think he would have won the Caulfield Guineas.
Yeah.
So that's an opportunity miss, and that's what they get for making a mile or a sprinter. So,
you know, the interesting thing is Switzerland is obviously Coolmore through and through, whereas Stormboy was, you know, just trained by Gay. I forget what those colours actually are, but were bought by Coolmore. So all of a sudden Coolmore have gone, oh, well, we've actually got options here of who we take to the Everest, which they're well within their right to do. They're $600,000 slots for a $20 million race. But then all the Stormboy owners that still have shares in him are going, well, what the hell? How can you just take our slot off us when we could have gone to a Caulfield Guineas? So very, very, very interesting situation that unfolded there. But I think it'll still be Stormboy that runs in the race.
Mm.
All right. Race 7 was the Hill Stakes. Attrition. Congratulations to the team. Brett Norton, friend of the show. Actual friend of the show. We're not actually just saying that. We will have to get him on the podcast soon enough. I'm sure he's had a fantastic weekend. You know, he's part of the reason, you know, him and Mitch Friedman sort of discussed this horse's preparation, and Brett was a big pusher for going to Sydney and racing him over 1900 in this $2 million Group 2. He was fourth up when winning the Toorak Handicap. this time last year on this very day, and he's won this race fourth up this year. So yet again, drawn a wide barrier. They always had intent to push forward, and wow, they've got the job done. Royal Patronage and Pericles, I thought they were both a risk out to this trip. They've run third and fourth respectively, and Kovalika does Kovalika things and runs home. But when it was all over,
attrition, saw the post and shit himself.
Don't know if that's quite true. I just think he's a 2,400 meter horse.
Oh, I'm joking. I don't actually think that. Horses don't know what they're doing. It's quite a flight.
Completely honest. Attrition, he's gone to 101.5 here, bot. It's just about as good as he's gone.
It is. Yes, it is.
So what do you make of that? Maybe this is his distance.
Yeah, I wouldn't – like, he's by Churchill. He's, you know, I think – It's a great training effort, and you can see it in the numbers. You know, fourth up, in his first prep, he won he ran a peak in the Australian Guineas when he ran second there. He won the Toorak fourth up, and he's won this race running a peak rating of 101.5 in Hill Stakes. So yes, he can be stretched to this distant range. And what do they do now? I think the Moonee Valley high pressure Crystal Mile could be his race, because I'm not exactly sure what's going there, but I wouldn't be scared of Royal Champion, who was, if there was a pre-post market, he would have been favourite before what he did at Flemington last week, because he was very poor and the market hated him. So yeah, he was good attrition. He's, you know, he's always been a nice horse. He's always been this level. Kovalika ran on too far back.
Just quietly, but I think you've forgotten about the Sydney program again.
I mean, I don't know what's there. So what is it going to win there that I've forgotten about? Is it a five-year-old? Diamonds. Oh, of course, yeah.
Over 18.
Oh, that's so annoying. Like, what's the point of having a race for five-year-olds? What is that? Why don't you just make it open to all horses? What is five-year-old and
but
only
if five I diamonds? Owned him, he'd be going straight to the five diamonds.
What? How much is it?
I think it's a mil and a half.
That's ridiculous. What else is going to that?
Even winning this race, the Hill Stakes, he's won more from winning this race than winning the Toorak handicap last year.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great placement.
Yeah. Anyway, crazy, crazy money and good win in the end. Quickly, two more to go. Hit a shock. He's carried the big 58.5 kilos and he's been very good to hold off Gringotts. So he's run to 99.7. This horse has just been an absolute marvel bot over the years. Mm. He pushed Antino in a Sandown Stakes about 380 days ago. Now he's lobbing here in Sydney, winning a $1.5 million Alan Brown. Gringotts looked to have him cold, and then he sort of kicked back. Waterford's ran onto third, and Incap, he's a good sort of yardstick, runs fourth. So yet again, this is a pretty good effort with one of the top weights.
I'm going to start having to say Melbourne form instead of Sydney form now, because Melbourne has been completely dominant over Sydney for the last year and a half, and you know, you see it in the lesser races as well. Like, midway courses are going up to Sydney and winning. Like, it's, you know, Melbourne has better trainers, has better jockeys, and better horses. It's that simple. Like, if I keep hearing people say, "Well, Sydney form," Sydney is a worse jurisdiction than Melbourne. It is that simple. Anyway, Hit a Shock is a nice horse. As you said, he ran really well in the Toorak last year. From memory, and he's turned up third up. He ran a really nice rating to win the Cameron Handicap.
Yeah,
I assume that's one of those new races or something. Maybe it's an old race.
No,
I'm not sure.
Come on.
I don't know. Ran really well there, and he's backed it up to win here. Gringotts was good enough. I mean, they're all going to stay in Sydney, so it's not relevant to me. But this race has gone okay. I mean, I don't know what's the level. I mean, for a $1.5 million race, they want to be breaking the 100 barrier. They haven't. So, there's a Medible there. He was there. Converge, what's happened to him? I mean, some of these, it would have been nice to see them in the Epsom last week. But
Yeah.
You know,
that's cannibalization we speak of.
This is a good race. Like, I mean, I mean, not a good race, but I would have, it's a race that I think it'd be fun to bet on because, you know, it had lots of different angles. You know, I would have liked to bet on this race if it was in Melbourne, but
yeah, I don't think most people have
to be the Epsom.
I don't think a lot of people have enjoyed betting on this because he was a little bit of a drifter here to shock. And I think a lot of people in these handicaps do see 58.5 kilos and go, no, want to back something down the weight. So I think a lot of people were either on Gringotts, Waterford or NCAP and they ran second, third, fourth.
I mean, he had the weight because he earned the weight.
Yeah, 100%. Alencio was really good in race 9. The Navision, she is a bomb fresh mare. I think she's won 4 out of 5 of her races fresh. She's run to 99.4 there. Sprinted what? Really well.
What is Danny St. Darcy doing here?
Yeah,
what?
Crazy.
Danny St. Darcy. That's the... Yeah. What?
Yes, that is, it is that horse. She's been transferred to Matthew.
You're kidding
Dale.
Me.
Yep.
No way.
And she's run enormous.
Yes, she has. Well, not. I mean, like, I cannot believe Danny St. Darcy is running.
She beat Danny St. Darcy, a Group 1 winner.
Mate, Danny St. Darcy is running second up in Sydney. And how much is this worth? Like, no, only 240. Like, yeah.
Melbourne form.
Alencia. I mean, it's not really because it's trained in Sydney now. But
yeah. Alencia was good. She can go to 1,400 metres next start. You know, the Waller second up factor, that's always something in the back of your mind. She did fail
maybe
second up last prep, so maybe you want to wait one and then hit her third up when she I don't know if she will go to 1,600 metres or not. I sort of think she's better sort of sprinting. 12
to 14. She won the Emancipation last time.
She did. That's 15, but yeah. At the end of a mile was probably still a little bit of a concern because I just feel like she has that really, really nice turn of foot. And the more you stretch her out, the more you take it out of her. So she was a nice winner, as was Ferrari in the last. More Melbourne form, Kieran Maher. Runs to 94.2. She's still a bit of a head case. She's a very, very, very fast mare. But she has developed a habit of sort of being a little bit slow away. And she had to do a fair bit of work to get herself back into the race. And she's won nicely up along the fence there. So the race didn't go anything outstanding, but this is only a benchmark 78, so she's still got a bit of wriggle room. The only other thing I want to quickly chat about was Hong Kong. I think we have seen the new star Hong Kong sprinter. His name is Galaxy Patch for Vincent Ho. Gee, this was an arrogant win. Carried the 58.5 kilos. He got the perfect card into it by Voyage Bubble, a Group 1 winner himself, but he's just got this ripping turn of foot. It's not Golden 60-like, but it's still very, very good, and I would expect him to go up favourite for the Hong Kong mile when markets go up. And if Antino's coming over to sort of face off with him, then that is extremely exciting. So although the King Miler is gone, he's been retired in Golden 60, we've got a new one on the block, and he looks very, very good. He's now won 8 of his 14 starts, and he's been runner-up on a further 3 occasions. So I think a mile is probably his best distance, Galaxy Patch, a mile 1,800. He did stretch out to 2,000 in a derby. Their derby is only 2,000. And he ran second in that to Massive Sovereign, but I sort of think 1,600 is probably his best distance. The other one was in the last, which was Wunderbar. This horse beat Ka Ying Rising at the end of last prep. Ka Ying Rising will be favourite for the Group 1 Hong Kong sprint when all in markets go up. And he was just too good. Bottom up together. He crossed from a wide draw and he went at a really, really good tempo. Bottom up together did SP $1.50 last start with Zach Purton in the saddle. Sort of just stargazed late and was run down late by Ruby Lot. This time around, Zach Purton was back on Wunderbar, the favourite. And this was the last leg of many, many multi-spots. So it was nice to have a good watch from barrier one. Purton just popped off the fence and chased down his main target. And although the margin was only narrow, it never really looked like he was going to get beat. So you can absolutely follow him. He looks a Hong Kong, he looks a horse for the Hong Kong sprint as well as Kai Ying Rising.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let me go to Instagram and open up this questions box. But just a bit of news while we have been doing the podcast. Coolmore confirms Stormboy as their Everest runner. So that is the first part of the news. And the second part of the news is, I don't know if someone's tapped into our microphones or something, but Too Close to Sun has been hit.
Has it? What price is it?
15s is now the top price from 19s. Okay. All right, Reece Jenkins, what was Benny's sign-on fee at CS? Didn't get one, actually. Didn't actually get one. Coops Irwin, who was a worst Guineas winner, Griff or Private Life?
Well, Private Life, but I feel like there's a little bit more improvement left in him. I don't, you know, Griff always seemed like he got away with it. And I think that, I mean, it's marginal, but Griff went better.
Yeah. Coops Irwin, Ben, how do bias tracks and conditions like Saturday affect how you look at futures betting? I think when I'm betting something in futures, usually I'm getting on at a price where you sort of just have to overlook what conditions or different factors there might be on the day. Because if I'm sending out a bet, say a tissue, we sent out a tissue in the Empire Rose today at $11. I just know for a fact she's going to start half that price on the day. At least half that price. She's going to be $5 or less, in my opinion, $6 or less. So you just sort of have to factor into your own mind the risk and reward of, okay, what if it's a heavy 10 track? What if the rail's out? What if there's an on-pace bias? And sort of just make your mind up like that. Toby says, how did they bet $26 for attrition? Don't know. They clearly didn't rate what he's been doing so far this preparation, but I thought his fee and run was sound. The rating was actually still pretty good, and maybe he was just looking for an extra bit of ground. So they've bet a big price for him to win the Toorak and the Hill Stakes 2 years consecutive. And you know what? We'll take it. Coops, Ben, how's your ego after your absolute day out at Sha Tin yesterday? yeah, it's good. It's good because, as I said, Saturday was just a – it just felt like one that got away because we had so many good bets going that just didn't land. And to get it back on Sunday and finish well in the positive for the weekend was nice. But what did you think of J-Mac's ride on last line dance on the Gold Coast, Polly?
No, it was brilliant. I loved it.
You drunken idiots. Cheering home J-Mac when he wasn't even riding. When will J-Mac get his 100th Group 1, boys?
Well, it was disappointing for the social team at racing.com that did it on Saturday because we want him to get it in Victoria.
You had it already. I don't reckon you'll get it this week. Sure it's Jolly Star or Fangirl.
Yeah.
You reckon he might?
Yeah, I sort of think that Jolly Star is the one in the Everest, but...
I reckon Pride of Jenny is the best bet of the weekend. I'm going nice and early.
I don't know. I can't wait to see Fangirl in a strongly run race.
But it's going to be interesting.
Yeah, because, I mean, if he doesn't get it next week, it'll probably be in Melbourne because if he doesn't pick one, like either the Cox Plate or the Melbourne Cup week, like, then he'd be heavily disappointed.
From a Mooney Valley perspective, we love if it's Via Sestina in the Cox Plate. We'll have the graphic ready to go.
Is he locked in for Via Sestina? Is that locked in? Or you just think that'll be... I mean, what else is he going to ride?
I think it's pretty well locked in.
Yeah.
I mean, unless a tissue had a stormed home and won by three on the weekend or Fangirl comes out and wins and all of a sudden they back up. But I think they've already come out and said she's not going to do that. So,
yeah.
The last one is from Sam Wally. Hey, fellas, Henline's still going to the Spring Champion. Cheers. Yeah, I haven't heard that he's not going to the Spring Champion. I just don't think the race shape and circumstances were with him on Saturday, but if you look back to his run, the start prior and the start stakes, like he's finishing right on the heels of Evaporate, who's beaten home broadsiding in a Guineas and didn't have that much a worse run than him. So,
yeah, I mean, what are they doing there? What is the goal? Like, I didn't talk about that, but what is that?
What?
What they've done in the Swift, both Swift Falcon and Hen, like the old, the goal of horse racing is to win races, and they were not trying to win
the horse race.
No, they weren't trying to win because everything's and geared towards the Group One.
I mean, if they genuinely think they were going to win riding them that way, well, you know, it's like what's his name said, the bloke that trains him. You know, if you draw wide, you have to go back and draw wide, you can't win. Well, you can't win if you settle 20 off him, mate. Like,
yeah.
Anyway,
we'll wrap the podcast up on a terrible note. Thanks, Will.
Yeah, you're welcome.
I'll bring it back with a positive note. We will be back this Thursday night for a massive preview of Everest weekend and also Caulfield Cup weekend. And we've got the best guest of all back on the podcast for his annual gig. His name is Nicholas McGualter. No, it's not. It's actually Julian Valance.
Getting
back on the podcast this Thursday night. So
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's going to be very good. We're going to have four on the panel, so we're really going to have to pick and choose which races we do because when there's four of us on, we can just blabble on all night long. So we need to be a bit more selective, Bot, and I'm probably going to be hurrying us up a little bit more than what I was tonight, taking it nice and slow. So
we'll just tell you to not go on tangents.
Yeah, well, that's pretty hard, isn't it? Yeah. We look forward to that, punters. Make sure you follow the podcast, share it around to your friends. And as we said, we're getting Jules Valance on Thursday. And you don't see a lot of his form in long format anymore. So it's going to be good to get him on. Cheers, guys. See you here on Thursday night.